鬼岛之音
Ghost Island Media.
Welcome back to the Taiwan Take. Today, a book that's the talk of town. Made in Taiwan, Recipes and Stories from the Island Nation, written by Clarissa Wei, a journalist based in Taiwan. She is our guest today. Made in Taiwan is a cookbook of over 100 recipes. It has famous dishes like the beef noodle soup and the gua bao, of course. But what made me really happy were the little things I grew up with. Black pepper steak and spaghetti from the night market. Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like. Sun cake from Taichung. Winter melon tea that I had after lunch every day in primary school. And of course, pork floss. But it's not just a cookbook. It's also a storybook of almost 30 mini essays, stories that explain some of the things we take for granted here. Hamburgers for breakfast, how to feed the gods, and one of my favorites, cows are friends, not food. The book has been named a best cookbook of fall 2023 by Bon Appetit, Forbes, Food & Wine, New York Magazine, Eater, and Tasting Table. It was published by Simon & Schuster in September. And I'm so thrilled to have its author here with us today. Thank you for joining us, Clarissa.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for liking pork floss. You're the first person who has actually said that.
I love pork floss, and I actually never knew how it's made. And now I have that recipe to try. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, so traditionally they do it over a large wok, and then you dehydrate it over like an hour. But I was like, no one's going to do that. Let's switch it to the oven. But if you end up making it, please let me know.
First of all, congratulations. Your book has been an instant success.
Thank you. It's been really cool to see how successful a book about Taiwanese food can be these days.
So you have been a food journalist for quite some time now. For almost a decade, you started writing about Asian cuisine in the LA Times, about Nicaragua for Vice, on China for Gold Thread and the SCMP of Hong Kong. Your other writings have been published in the New York Times, The Guardian, The New Yorker. I could go on. And actually, 2 years ago, your podcast on sustainable crop around the world was named by Guardian one of the best food podcasts of the year. And you have a new cooking show? How do you have the time to write a book?
I don't know. I mean, this was 2 years ago, and it was really difficult. I would wake up at 8 a.m. and work from 9 until 11 and just recipe tests. But I had help, so I think a lot of people forget that I did not do this by myself. I had an incredible team that helped me from every aspect, from research to recipe development to photography.
And you also have a co-writer, Ivy Chen, which I'll ask you about later.
Mm-hmm.
So you wrote in your introduction that the whole point of this book is to tell the story of Taiwan as best as we can before it's too late. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, I think just even I was living in Hong Kong for 2.5 years, and you see how quickly a place's sense of identity can shift overnight. And looking back at Taiwan's history, you see with every regime change or every change of the government, there's sort of this amnesia that happens, or people forget about the foods of the past or the culture of the past. And it's sort of supplanted by, you know, what narrative the current government wants to tell. And as you know, Taiwan is facing unprecedented threats again, and we are at a risk of losing our history once again. And I wanted to tell this history, but very much through the perspective of food, because that's just what I specialize in.
When it comes to culture books, it's quite rare to see a book that's so grounded in identity and politics. When you were pitching this to your editors, how big was that discussion? What was that conversation like?
So the first round, I didn't include any of that. It was just, here, this is a book about Taiwan, and it just did not fly. Like, no one really wanted to hear it. And then a couple things happened after my second round of pitching. It was, you know, the Hong Kong protests, COVID, and Stop Asian Hate. And it was after, you know, the Chinese airplanes were sort of sent over our ADIZ zone. After all of those things happened, then editors were like, oh, wow, Taiwan matters. It's time to pay attention. And it was kind of crazy to see how quick that shift was in the span of a year. And then because of those factors, I factored that into my proposal, and it just resonated with people immediately, because I think for the longest time it was, especially in the food world, it's like, why do we care about Taiwanese food? Isn't it just a subset of Chinese food? It's such a small little island. It's not a big market. You know, we have another author of Taiwanese descent. But because of what's happening in the news, Taiwan is relevant. So I found that it was appropriate to include what's happening to Taiwan here and now.
Yeah. And I love the way how it's laid out, in the sense that it felt like I was reading a Lonely Planet book. You know, before you go into a new country, you should know about the history, the political history, the geography history, the land history, the people's history. And then you get into culture and the likes and dislikes of people. And I think for somebody who's probably new to Taiwan or who has never been here but has a bit of interest in it, they could really put Taiwan in its place in history, which that's what I really, really appreciated.
Yeah. And ironically enough, I've worked on a lot of guidebooks on Taiwan before. So I think maybe that's kind of where I drew that inspiration. And it's just important to explain to people what Taiwan is before you just get straight into the food.
Your book begins with this quote: "Neither race, language, nor culture form a nation, but rather a deeply felt sense of community and shared destiny." So this is from the memoir of Taiwanese democracy activist Po Mingming, a giant in modern history. He first went into exile in 1962, first to Sweden and then to the U.S., to return 22 years later to Taiwan after martial law was lifted and after the last dictator, Jiang Jingguo, had died. How did you come across this quote, and what does it mean to you personally?
Yeah, so I was reading his memoir, and I think this quote was like a quote that he had done of another writer, but it was something that sort of resonated throughout his life. And when I saw, you know, race, language, and culture, I almost want to add food to that quote as well, because this happens all the time, especially on Twitter or on the online space. And it's always like, we share the same race, we share the same language, where you have the same culture, therefore you are all Chinese. And that is an argument that is brought up over and over and over again. But the second part of that sentence, you know, a shared destiny and a sense of community, that's what makes up a nation. And that's what we are here in Taiwan. Sure, we have shared heritage, language, roots, food with, you know, our neighbors across the strait. But we do not have the same sense of community. We are very separate. And I felt like that quote really embodied what I was going for with this book, or how I feel about Taiwanese identity as well.
Po Mingming, in 1995, when it came in time for our first presidential election in Taiwan, he was the candidate representing the opposition party. So with an opening quote like that and a book like that, so do you get a lot of, let's say, opposing views so far on the internet?
100%. And most of it actually came before the publication of the book. After the book has been published, there's been very few, which is very satisfying, or maybe they've just got tired. And I think the reaction didn't even come from the content of the book. It just came from the title, you know, Recipes and Stories from the Island Nation. And the fact that that is so polarizing speaks volumes about how controversial Taiwan continues to be on the international stage. And I anticipated that this would happen, which is why I, you know, included a whole essay explaining the status quo and why Taiwan's status in the international community is so confusing, and it's not a black or white thing.
You do state from the onset that you're talking about Taiwan, that this is our own nation that's distinct from China, a country that's made of different ethnicities, that's been through multiple colonizations, that the food is our form of self-expression.
Mm-hmm.
As a Taiwanese, it all feels very validating. Yes, you know, this is how, this is, has been our history, and this is how we can express ourselves. And it is okay via this, what used to be a quasi-Chinese, quasi-half-Taiwanese. But the reality is we have this Tai Cai, this Taiwanese cuisine. But when we're trying to explain it to others, sometimes it's, you know, I never, growing up here, I never had to learn how it's different from everywhere else. This is just what you grew up with. So it's really nice that, I mean, this book for you has been years of research from a whole team, and to put it all in perspective and to articulate such, I think, is a really powerful tool for the rest of us as well.
Yeah, I mean, when I started this book, I couldn't articulate how Taiwanese cuisine was different than Chinese cuisine. It's the same as you growing up, you know, in Los Angeles, my parents referred to us as Chinese and Taiwanese. It wasn't a big deal. But then going through like the pantry items and really getting into the nitty gritty of the ingredients that go into every single dish, it was very distinct and obvious how different our food is. And it took this book for me to realize how different it is.
Yeah, here I'm still learning the difference between like a northern zongzi and a southern zongzi. And we're known for our beef noodle soup. But then I had to learn as an adult that not everybody's version of beef noodle soup is the same. Mm-hmm. Where I grew up, the beef chunks and the noodles are square.
Oh, okay.
Versus others is brisket, right? Yeah, so much that we take for granted. So I love your mini essays and stories of food. One of the ones that made me smile so much was the history of Mei Er Mei. That's the breakfast shop that popularized hamburgers for breakfast. That exact chain was where I ate my breakfast every morning between the ages of 10 and 12. And have a hard time explaining that to international friends. Like, what did you think when you first saw that?
I mean, I don't think I really thought about it that much because coming back to Taiwan as a kid, I was just like, that is what it is. And then somewhere in my research, when I figured out the history, it just clicked for me because I was like, oh, the sanmingzi, the sandwiches, the hamburgers, that didn't like come out of nowhere. That was invented by someone or that was introduced by someone and it became part of Taiwanese food. And that's something I tell people a lot when I'm doing these interviews where people think Taiwanese food is like all Chinese-like food, you know, like traditional noodles, rice, and soups. But mm-hmm. I would argue that the hamburgers, the sandwiches, the night market steak, that is as Taiwanese as anything else. It's just forgotten about because, you know, a tourist who would come to Taiwan wouldn't necessarily want to eat that or they would think it was bad fusion food or bad Western food. But I mean, for you growing up and even for me visiting Taiwan as a kid, these were things I craved and I loved eating. And it's such an important part of our culinary fabric.
Yeah, the steak and spaghetti from the night market. Really curious that you had the sun cake from Taichung. So sun cake is one of our favorites in the household as well, because my father's from Taichung. And so I grew up just thinking that was the norm, that every town there is a street where every shop claimed to be the original sun cake maker. So what have been some of your favorites?
In terms of the dishes, this sounds cliche, but I really like the beef noodle soup dish. And it's mm-hmm. because I got it from a chef who has, I think he's the reigning champion of the International Beef Noodle Soup Competition, which is a competition here in Taipei that they started in 2007 when Ma Ying-jeou was mayor. And this guy, Chef Hong, he's won 5 times, which is the most of any competitor in history. He has a beef noodle soup restaurant in Taipei, but he also trains other chefs how to become beef noodle soup chefs. And he gave me his recipe that he gives to his students.
Oh, wow.
Not the recipe that he uses in his restaurants, but like the base recipe he gives to his students. And it took me a long time to like convert those recipes. Like I have to convert the proportions so it makes sense for a home cook. But when I finally tried it, it was amazing because I don't think it's super heavy on the doubanjiang, which is the fermented bean paste that usually sometimes over-dominates the beef noodle soup. And it's very minimalistic and light. And interestingly enough, when I showed this recipe to Ivy, now Ivy is a cooking teacher here in Taiwan. She's been teaching Taiwanese food for 20 years. Even she was like, wow, this recipe is incredible. I learned something new from it. So just something about his ratios and proportions and spices, it was just incredible. And being able to make that type of high quality beef noodle soup at home was really fun. And it reminded me why I even wanted to embark on this journey of trying to collect and preserve these recipes.
So does he make his own noodles too?
Yeah, so he doesn't make his own noodles. And interestingly enough, most beef noodle soup places don't make their own noodles. What they're obsessed with is the quality of the beef. So he actually mm-hmm. has a cow farm in Jingmen where he raises his own cows,
oh, wow.
which is really unique because most beef noodle soup restaurants in Taiwan, they import their cows from America or Australia because Taiwanese beef is considered of lower quality, but this guy raises his own cows. And so he says the beef quality is the most important. And then everything else is sort of an accessory, which is his dominant theory.
So did you say that for every recipe? Because I assume most of these, that they're not grandma's recipe, right? There used to be that grandma recipe, but then now have made a really popular shop out of it. So they're making for a large scale, and you had to take every recipe to make it into a household ratio. Yeah, what is that process like?
So it's not every recipe, but there were a couple of chefs that I did that for. So like the Zhou Zhaofan in Tainan, we had to do that as well. And it was just, some of it was easier. Like Chef Hung, he gave me a physical printout of a recipe. So that was just doing math and figuring it out. Others were like Ivy and I would taste it and Ivy would reverse engineer it because she's really good at tasting something and recreating it. I can't do that. And then most of them, I would say, were, you know, either Ivy's original recipe or we got it from home cooks who kind of just like walked us through the steps. But it really took, you know, Ivy sort of being that, like creating that base standard to make sure what we have in the book reflects what is in Taiwan. Because as you know, like one dish, there's like 100 variations. So yeah. It was in between. It was Ivy who would choose, you know, this is the variation we're going to stick with. And sometimes we did make subtle tweaks to people's recipes, but we wanted to keep it as consistent as possible. But yeah, I mean, it took me 9 months to really like test all those recipes. And not only did me and Ivy cook it, we had a researcher who like cooked through most of it. And then we had over 50 recipe testers based around the world who tried all the recipes. So I hope they're foolproof because we've cooked them so many times.
Wow. The number of times you were at the master's places and then the kitchens and then that math and then the testing and then the tasting and then the writing.
It was insane.
So how did you meet Ivy, your co-author?
So I just popped into her class one day as a student. I think this was 10 something years ago. I was visiting Taiwan in my early 20s and we just kept in touch. Mm. I think I went in for another class again a couple years later. And then she just kind of became my go-to when I was writing stories on Taiwan and need someone to interview for that local angle. And when I was pitching this book towards the end, I was telling her about it and she was like, I want to be a part of this. Like, let me be a part of this. And it was the best decision I ever made because without her input and without her recipes, essentially, I don't think this book would have been as great as it is now, I think.
I loved how much of the community you gathered from the tasters around the world to, you know, that friend you made from 10 years ago. But then I also saw notes on how you had worked with the Bowl and Dish Museum or the Museum of the Old Tiles. They supplied some of the bowls and plates to photograph.
Yeah.
Beautiful photographs in the book. Did they know what kind of cookbook you had in mind? Or did they just think, okay, sure, this is a beautiful artifact. Sure, please make use of it.
Definitely the latter. I don't think people really understood. I don't even think people still understand that much what we were doing. And how I went about doing that was because my food stylist and photographer, they're based in Tainan. And when I visited them before I hired them, they had a whole back room full of props that they had collected over the years and just things they got off the streets from, you know, apes and amas. And when I saw a lot of these, I was like, we should be reaching out to more people to collect even more dishes. And that would just became sort of an organic thing. It wasn't something I factored into my proposal. It was just something inspired by my team.
What does a food stylist do?
She is responsible for every single photograph that you see there, from the like the top corner to like the color. She does everything. And every single photo took an average of like one, sometimes up to 2 hours to style. And nothing is there accidentally. And every single prop was selected by her. The lighting was adjusted. If you look through the photographs, you'll see that every chapter has a certain mood lighting. I think Night Market is a much more warm light. Family Style is much more natural light. So everything was done on purpose. And so she would set everything. We would cook the dishes and then she would set everything up and then the photographer would take the photo. But they worked the hardest when we were doing, we did a 2-week photo shoot in Tainan where we were just in their studio nonstop for 2 weeks straight. And again, every single photograph you see in there took 1 to 2 hours to style before we clicked that shutter.
Could you eat the food afterwards?
Yeah. So that was, I mean, that's what we had for dinner. It was cold, but we would heat it up. And the food was really good. And all of that was cooked by us on the spot for the photograph. So, you know, I think a lot of people will buy in the food or they'll just do street photography. We have a couple of street photography where we photographed it from the vendors at the market, but most of those were done in the studio.
That's incredible.
It is so cool. And I think she's one of the few, I don't think food styling is a big profession here in Taiwan. So the fact that I found one was really fun. Most of her clients are restaurants, so she does a lot of menus. So being able to do a cookbook on Taiwanese food was a delight for her. Talking to her was really interesting. She said most of her clients are Taiwanese and they always ask her for, oh, I want a Japanese style or I want a Nordic style. And she never gets to use her like old props that she has gotten on the streets. And so having to create a Taiwanese style book for her was such a challenge and an artistic endeavor. And I think she also found it very rewarding because she never thought that anyone in Taiwan, less the world, would be interested in a project like this.
It's such a pretty book. Let's take a short break here. And when we come back, we'll have more from Clarissa on the book.
Hey, if you have enjoyed the Taiwan Take and would like to support Ghost Island Media, we take monthly donations on Patreon. We're at patreon.com/Taiwan. And please give us a good rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. This helps other people find the show. All right, thank you. And back to the show.
Welcome back to the Taiwan Take. I've been speaking with Clarissa Wei, author of the new book, Made in Taiwan, Recipes and Stories from the Island Nation. Clarissa, I also love just how this book is organized. The sections of the books are breakfast, side dishes, Tainan, lunch break, family style, beer food, aka 热炒, night market, special occasions, sweets, pickles and sauces and so on. I want to go to this beer food section, aka 热炒. So the 热炒 lifestyle is a bit of an untold secret here. You wrote about it for the New York Times this year. And in this book, you reference a particular regular gathering by a fellow journalist in Taiwan here. Bring us back to when you first arrived back in Taiwan to live. You and your husband walk into the table of the 热炒. It's about 20 people there. What went through your mind there?
So the fellow journalist, he's a mutual friend of ours, Chris. And I think when I first started hanging out with Chris, again, so long ago, 10 years ago or something, he was like, let's go to Zetal. And I didn't actually know what a Zetal was. But when I went there, I was like, oh, I mean, I know what this is. I've been going to this my whole life with my parents. But I didn't know that there was an actual term attached to it. And then going into the history, it was really interesting. And there's a reason why I think the diaspora isn't super aware of it. It was because it really came into being and was coined in the 1980s and the 90s. And by then, my parents had already left. So they never referred to it as a zetao. I think it was like a haitan dian or just like another restaurant. And these places came up, you know, during the democratization of Taiwan. And I think the Zetao table really embodies what modern Taiwanese food is like and what modern Taiwanese people eat. Everyone, again, when they're coming to Taiwan for the first time and they want to interview me, they want to take me to the night market. But I'm always like, how about we go to a Zetao instead? Because I think that food is more representative of modern day Taiwan. So you have a lot of Japanese influence in there, you know, like salmon with miso glaze, sashimi platters. We also have like, quote, regional Chinese dishes, but with like a very Taiwanese twist. A lot of sanbei, three cup dishes, which is something that you see that I would say is very special to Taiwan. This is a technique that is present in China as well, of course, but I think it's very predominant in Taiwanese cuisine, more so than in China. So you have three cups chicken, squid, seafood, live seafood from the fish tanks. And the menus, as you know, can be 100 to 200 items long. And it's really cheap. And everything is punctuated by, you know, a Taiwan beer. And I just think this symphony of dishes really represents how we eat today and how we unwind after a long day. I mean, I saw you at a Zetao last week and the food was amazing, and every place has their own specialty. And I just really wanted to include this genre of food because I don't feel like people are talking about it in the food world, but I feel like it's what embodies modern Taiwanese food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a sentence you, the way you described it, there was one way, I'm trying to find it. You referenced a bit to it just now, how it's Chinese style, but with Japanese toppings, condiments, and seafood. But that's not the actual sentence.
Let me find it. I have...
Ah, okay. It's a new class of outdoor beer restaurants serving cheap lagers with quick plates of food. They combine regional Chinese influences, Japanese condiments, and local seafood into one large fusion genre that's unique to the island. I had a, growing up also in Taipei, we had a Rechao Dian at the corner, but as you said, at the time, we didn't call it Rechao Dian. It was just called a Hai Chan Dian, like a seafood restaurant. So you would walk in, and before you enter, you're met with crates, like 20 crates of different types of seafood, and that's where you pick your dishes. And so that to me was always the most fun.
Yeah, and I think the fusion is sort of what like that I think describes Taiwanese food to its core. I think when people come to Taiwan, they think we're a very homogenous society because, you know, 90% of us have Han Chinese ancestry. But I think our different waves of immigration, our family backgrounds, all of that has created this like fusion cuisine, depending on, you know, what era your family immigrated over or your background and stuff. So we are like a secret fusion society, I would say.
And you grew up in LA. Your parents are from Tainan. And in your book, you thanked your parents for their diehard insistence on eating Taiwanese food every single day of your childhood. What was the Taiwanese food you grew up with?
It was really simple. So it was like steamed fish. My mom would make luo fan, but with like ground pork and just like make her healthy version. She would make sanbei ji, but with beer instead of rice wine. And like a lot of kongxin cai, water spinach, but it was these same flavors that we have here in Taiwan. And when I was younger, she was an overachiever and she would, you know, make at least 5-6 dishes on the table. And it would be like a Taiwanese family style dinner, right? You would have your protein, your fish, your rice, your soup, your vegetables and fruit. And I always just never really thought about that until I grew up and how much effort she put into all of that.
Was it very difficult getting all those ingredients while you were in the U.S.?
No, because we had a 99 Ranch, which is a Taiwanese-owned supermarket chain. And my parents would drive an hour to the nearest 99 Ranch every single week. And they would stock up on 2 full carts of groceries and then bring it back. And every time we went to Taiwan, they would bring back suitcases full of ingredients. And I remember like at a very young age, I don't think this is legal anymore. Maybe it wasn't before, but they would bring frozen fish packed in styrofoam.
Oh, wow.
And sneak it in our suitcase from Taiwan and bring it to the States. I think now you can get all the fish you want at the grocery stores, but back then they wanted a specific variety of fish. I forgot what type of fish it was, but they did that multiple times when I was younger.
And it stayed fresh.
Yeah, it was packed in styrofoam with lots of ice. I don't know how that made it through customs.
I think in the U.S. right now, there is a burgeoning scene of Taiwanese cuisine and markets. There's 86 in New York City. There's the Yunhai Pantry in Brooklyn, and even more in L.A., as you would know. I think you have a friend who has a restaurant in London. Give us a sense of what this the newest trends in Taiwanese food abroad.
Yeah, so I think when I was growing up, it was people weren't really defining Taiwanese food as anything. There were a couple of Taiwanese restaurants where I lived in Los Angeles, which is a very Taiwanese American community, but they just kind of billed themselves as Chinese food. And there were specialties from Taiwan, but no one was defining it. Now these restaurants are owned by the second generation. And I think with second generation Asian Americans, there's this desire to really define our heritage and sort of articulate that, you know, versus where the parents, they just made what they made. And now it's a bunch of young people really trying to tell the story of Taiwan through food. And it's very purposeful. So in terms of dishes, I think people really try to specialize in something, or they try to find the origins of stuff. I think in New York, there's a beef noodle soup place called Ho Foods, where he just does a really good beef noodle soup, which is incredible to see. In LA, we have a fine dining restaurant called Kato, and the chef John Yao does fine dining Taiwanese food, which is like, that sounds crazy to me. I think in the 90s or early 2000s, that would have been really weird. But I think now that the international world has an awareness of what Taiwan is, these chefs and entrepreneurs are able to create these concepts, really embracing our cuisine.
Speaking of fine dining, then, now in Taiwan, how big of a foodie are you? I asked that in the context of Michelin is here now in Taiwan, and so they roll out come the newest Michelin mentions in every city, or at least in the big food cities, Taipei, Tainan, Kaohsiung. And there's been Taiwanese fine dining cuisine. They use local ingredients, and it's sometimes French style, meaning it's tiny portions, really delicate, you pair it with wine and so on. How much do you try that type of Taiwanese cuisine?
Oh, I mean, it's ironic because I don't go out and eat much, and people are always asking me for what the latest and best restaurants is. And I'm always like, I don't know. Like, I can't afford eating out like that. Now that I have a family, I can barely leave my house. But it is cool to see, because I think for this year, for the first time ever, a Taiwanese restaurant won 3 Michelin stars, whereas before we have gotten in that, but it's Cantonese restaurants in Taiwan or Japanese restaurants in Taiwan. So now Taiwanese fine dining is being propelled to another level. We've had Taiwanese fine dining for years, but people are really taking it to a whole other level and talking about identity and conflict with China openly as well, whereas before people sort of ignored it. But it's cool to see Taipei becoming an international dining destination for Taiwanese food, because I think, you know, in the 80s and before, people would come to Taiwan for great Chinese food. And how crazy that has shifted over the last 2 decades has been incredible to see.
Yeah, you speak about that new kind of new generation of creators and artists with this renewed sense of Taiwanese identity. I think my feeling growing up is that it's within this generation, it's always been there, but the ways of articulating it through the arts, through cooking, through music, bands, illustrations, books, and so on, there's more ways of expressing that. And so there's more of that output, but then there's also more people asking those questions.
Yeah.
And then, and hence, we're hearing more people who are saying, that's right, this is who we are.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. It's always been there. And I think one of the most prominent instances of that was when Chen Shui-bian was elected president. And and I was like combing through presidential banquet menus. And before Chen Shui-bian was president...
In the year 2000.
Right. In the year 2000, before that, when you look at the banquet menus, it was all what I call ethereal Chinese food. So like shark fin soup, Peking duck, fish from Jiangsu. And then when you look at Chen Shui-bian's menu, all of a sudden it was like milkfish from Tainan, you know, like whatever product from Penghu, really honoring the local farmers and the ingredients. And then you see Tsai Ing-wen's menu and even Ma Ying-jeou's menu. They started to give credit to the local farmers and the local products and the specialties that have developed here. So it'd be interesting to see what the next president does with his menu. And again, I think that trend really started in the 2000s, and then it's been heightened and it takes on different forms in restaurants and fine dining restaurants. But before the 2000s, I don't think there was that much tribute to local products at all on a high level.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that reminds me of one of your first chapters in the introduction when you're setting the scene to Taiwan. You kind of walk us through the landscape of Taiwan, through the indigenous communities that live here, and the fishing, the hunting, the agriculture, all the different types of food sources within nature that the people are kind of having a really good, healthy relationship. I thought that was a beautiful way of opening.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think we sometimes forget that the people here have had a relationship with local food for centuries. And it's, I think whoever is in charge of the government will, they shape the narrative of what Taiwanese cuisine is. And so for the longest time when we were under martial law, people just thought Taiwan was a hub of regional Chinese food, which was true back in the day. But the people who came over post-1949, they only made up 15% of the population. But interestingly enough, their food and culture dominated the international narrative of Taiwan. It's been 20-some years since we've been, 30-some years since we've been a democracy. And it's actually very frustrating to me, or interesting, how the international conversation of Taiwanese food has not shifted or has not been updated since then at all.
Yeah. And so for that, thank you for writing the book. It's hugely important, not just in terms of our food, our story, but kind of the time and place right now.
And thank you for reading it and printing it out like that. I'm really honored.
Looking forward to buying the hard copy that I can use. So last questions. What's looking forward? What is next? I hear a Mandarin translation of the book is in the works.
That's the goal. That's the hope. I honestly, this sounds like really weird, but I would love to work on a book about Chinese food, which sounds like completely contradictory to everything that I have done. But I have spent a lot of time in China, and I think it's the same. It comes from the same place from this book as well. Like, the people of China are not their government. And, you know, across the strait, it is has a beautiful food culture. And I've spent a lot of time there as well. So it'd be really cool to synthesize my experience there in a book and go deep into that. That would be the dream. But we'll see how things pan out.
It sounds like you have a lot of work ahead of you. So thank you so much for today, for taking the time out of your very busy schedules. I think you have a book talks coming up in Taipei. Are there others that our audiences can attend in person?
Yeah, so there's a New Bloom event on November 18th, and then there's one at the Community Center in December. All the event info is on my website, which is clarissaway.com. And if people want to do more events, I'm down. And then if you're in Taiwan, you can buy the book at S-Lite. And I think Amazon does deliver to Taiwan, but support the local bookstores if you can.
Yes, perfect, perfect. All right, thank you. Clarissa Wei, Taiwanese-American journalist based in Taiwan. The book is titled Made in Taiwan, Recipes and Stories from the Island Nation. It is out everywhere where books are sold. This has been a Ghost Island Media production based in Taipei. This episode was produced by me, Emily Waiwu, with assistance from Kara Ganago. thank you for listening.